Welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from the studio WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Brad Thor, author of Rising Tiger. Brad, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Hey, John. It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Brad, the opening scene of Rising Tiger takes place in the Galwa Valley of the Western Himalayas, and the opening line is, quote, "The battle had been barbaric," unquote. What's the battle, and how does this story start?
Well, with my thrillers, I tell people, John, what I do is I write faction, where you don't know where the facts end and the fiction begins. And I wanted to use this opening scene that's based on something that happened 2 years ago this summer. Chinese troops crept over the border from China into India through this border region known as the line of actual control. You're not allowed to have firearms there. And there have been a lot of skirmishes. And in the middle of the night, the Chinese crept across with iron bars studded with spikes and baseball bats wrapped with barbed wire. It was a medieval hand-to-hand sort of battle that lasted for 6 hours. People thrown off these high Himalayan cliffs into these precipices. It was absolutely horrific. It really happened. And as I was looking to set a spy thriller in India, something I have not seen any of my contemporaries do, I thought, I've got to open with this scene because it's just, it's a perfect depiction of how barbaric and underhanded the Chinese are.
I remember that incident in the news. It didn't make a lot of news, but it was in the news. Why was it so medieval? Why were they not fighting with guns?
Amazingly enough, I mean, the Chinese will come over and ambush the Indian soldiers, but they'll still respect this rule, this kind of gentleman's agreement between India and China not to have firearms in this area so that these skirmishes don't spill over into a war. And my idea is, how about no skirmishes? Stay on your frickin' side of the border. You know, but the CCP has been doing this thing that the Chinese refer to as silkworming, but we in the West call salami slicing, where they keep trying to, even if it's an inch, it's a foot, it's a yard, they keep trying to shave off territory from their neighbors, whether it's India, whether it's Bhutan. They keep doing this, but they've got this whole thing going with the Belt and Road Initiative, a thing called the String of Pearls, where they are basically trying to put a rope, a noose around the neck of India and pull it tight to basically shut India off from the rest of the world, whether it's by controlling the Indian Ocean or having agreements with countries like Pakistan and so on and so forth to surround India and to freeze them out. Because for the Chinese, India is a big threat, much the way Putin has seen Ukraine and the democracy there as a threat to Russia.
So explain the setting. What drew you to India? You've done that a little bit already, and there are many settings in this book, China, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, the United States. But as you say, it's set primarily in India. We don't get a lot of spy thriller espionage novels in India. What drew you to that country?
That whole attack that happened 2 summers ago really captured my interest. But we are, in the United States, we're the oldest democracy in the world. India is the largest, and they are a natural ally for us. And so as a thriller author, I like to look at particularly geopolitical events because I have fun, shoot 'em up, intrigue, espionage books, but I like to use a big geopolitical set piece. And I looked at India and I thought, wow, we've got something called the Quad, which is this relationship between India, the U.S., Australia, and Japan. What if we actually tried to create an Asian version of NATO and put India at the center? That was the premise of this book. And the Chinese would do everything they could to stop it. The Chinese would not want India having a formalized relationship with us. And so I thought, okay, how might this start? What might it look like? What kind of shadow diplomacy would we do in the beginning? And as soon as China found out, what would they do to sink this plan of the United States? And so this all came together in a really cool, fast-paced plot. And it was fun for me because I'd never done anything in India before in any of my books. It's the first time I've ever done it. And it was tough. I had to learn a whole new culture to write this book, but it was a lot of fun.
The hero is Scott Harvath. Who is he and what's his role in the story of Rising Tiger?
So Harvath is a former Navy SEAL who got brought into the White House to help bolster their counterterrorism expertise. And eventually the president realized you can't take a guy like this and put him on defense. And we need him out there on offense. And if our enemies aren't going to play by any rules, then we ought to field a couple guys for our team who won't play by any rules either. And so Harvath works for a private intelligence service. We've seen Blackwater, Triple Canopy, groups like that that have kind of privatized the military. Imagine if a group in Northern Virginia decided to privatize the CIA's functions, gather intelligence, analyze the intelligence, and launch operations that could give the president plausible deniability. And that's Harvath's group and what he does. So an American diplomat trying to get this Asian NATO going is killed by the Chinese in India, and Harvath gets sent over and says, figure out who did it, and if you can prove it's the Chinese, then start the kill chain. Go right to the top, kill every single person who was involved.
You always say these books are primarily about entertainment. You want to tell great stories, but you're always interested in telling, sharing points about geopolitics and grand strategy. How do you balance these two interests of yours in a novel like Rising Tiger?
It's hard. It's got to happen in conversation. It can't be exposition for me as the narrator. It's got to be conversation between characters. And Elmore Leonard had a great piece of advice for writers years ago, which is leave out the parts that people skip. I'm a Clancy fan, and my dad would always claim that Clancy was paid by the word because his books were so long. So it's part of the art is knowing what to leave out. But you know, I was fascinated by how much stuff I was able to find out about our existing relationship with India and what we need to do to make it better, from a foreign policy magazine op-ed by Nikki Haley all the way to a good friend of mine who was the former national security advisor in the last administration. India is a fascinating part of the world. Their democracy is not perfect, but boy, do we need to move them away from their relationship with the Russians and bring them closer into the fold with us in our Western allies. It's a great, great country that has a lot of promise.
This is your 21st book. The first 20-some years ago was The Lions of Lucerne. And you can read any of them. You can read them in order. You can read them out of order. You can start with Rising Tiger. You can go back and read them one after another. Do you have a favorite?
You know what? It's interesting. I always tell people my favorite is the next one, because that's the one I'm all excited about that I'm currently writing. It's next year's book. I got that from David Morrell, a great thriller author and the author of Rambo. That was one of his first books. But yeah, so I love Rising Tiger, though. It's just so different for me. It's such a departure in the setting and who's involved and what's going on. I like this one a lot. I've liked all the books. Each one's special. John, it's like saying, which of my children is my favorite? And it's normally I'll wink. If I've got one in front of me, I'll point to that one and say, you're my favorite. So they know it's a joke and a lie. I love them all.
Mine, just to be on the record with it, is one called The Last Patriot, which if I remember, it was banned in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, so that one was based on some research that had come out where a bunch of German specialists in dating manuscripts had been brought to Yemen. This is a real life story, that there's a bunch that got left out of the Quran. And the Muslim faith claims that the Quran is a perfect copy of a perfect book in heaven, so there's no way anything could be left out of it. So I did a thriller based on missing chapters from the Quran, and if they could be found, they would completely turn the religion of Islam inside out. Would have been one last request of the prophet before he died. So the fact that I was claiming that even fictionalizing that the Quran was incomplete, that Muhammad was murdered by a couple of his followers, Glenn Beck called it the Da Vinci Code of Islam. It didn't sit well in Saudi Arabia. So yeah, that book you're not going to find at the local Publix in downtown Riyadh.
What have you learned about writing that you didn't know when you started?
Wow, that's a great question. The thing that I learned that I didn't know in the beginning is it's top of mind when I write all my books, which is you owe it to your readers to be the best you possibly can. And that means during your downtime, you've got to be striving to get better. I really do believe that authors are people who can improve their craft. And as I got a couple books in, I realized just reading other writers wasn't enough. I wanted to read books about becoming a better writer. So that's something that I wish I had started doing earlier on. But I don't think the books early on suffered from that. I think it just would have pushed me further and faster. You compare my early books to now, my chapters are shorter, crisper, more cinematic. I love the early stuff, but it's stuff I was writing before kids where I could sit down and write a 20-25 page chapter and really enjoy the feel of that. But the entertainment industry has changed too. So as a writer, I felt like I had to change with it. And I found that the short, crisp, cinematic chapters really work well.
Last question. What can we expect a year from now? What's next for you?
It's a great question. So I am currently weaving together what next year's book will be. You know, it's fun to do these interviews with you, John, because I have no idea what next year's book is going to be yet, but I'll come back next year and I'll talk about it and I'll have it done. Like when we did this last year for my book, Black Ice, I had no idea what Rising Tiger was going to be. But it's funny, the retailers push, it's like Christmas comes earlier every year and you barely get your new book into the market and the retailers want to start promoting the next book and they want to know what's the title, what's the story. So when you and I finish our interview here, I need to dive back into all my newspaper clippings and shake them out. Magic box, as James Rollins, my author buddy, says, and pull out next year's story.
The author is Brad Thor. The book is Rising Tiger. Brad, thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure, John. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.